We're going to begin with a roll call.
David Bateman. Marcy Benda.
Here.
Nicholas Brennan. Jonathan Butcher.
I see him here.
Okay. Erica Crawley. Zora Duran.
Here.
Eve DeRosa. Deborah Dinner. Ellen Gaynor.
Here.
Andy Garcia Ortiz. Andrea Henlon Mott. Sawad Karim.
Here. I'm sorry. I was late. I'm on my way in from my car. I'll be right there.
Ava LaGressa.
Present.
Nicholas Maggard.
Present.
Salman Matan. Sriram Motodugla. Stephanie Rizzo. Christian Tarala.
Present.
Wendy Treat. And Adam Vincent.
Here.
And you have 9 in total.
Okay. We're going to move on to the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Cayuga Nation. The Cayuga Nation are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of 6 sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Cayuga Nation dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Cayuga Nation people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Okay. We're going to skip the approval of the January 21st, 2025 minutes because we don't have. Oh, wait. David and Erica and Cheryl are all here. So we will proceed with the approval of the January 21st minutes. Y'all can just access them in the box and review before we move forward with either approving or denying.
I move to amend the minutes. In business of the day, Marla Love is the dean of students, not the vice president of students.
Sorry, that's all right.
I'd like to amend it as well. Under opening discussion, the assembly discussed the respective assembly's response to the executive activity policy. I think
express. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well.
Did someone mention number 4 where it says approval of the minutes from the, and then just stops there?
It shouldn't.
Wait, is it just my computer? Oh, wait, you really had a different version.
Approval.
The second version down the chat is the next updated version.
Why?
Okay, so. Okay, so under section 5A, we're going to change it to VP or Dean of Students. It's filled in and updated.
Oh, okay. Sorry. And then under open discussion, it should be He's president rather than anything.
Okay.
That's really good. Under assembly reports, GPSA, the president's name is misspelled.
Kalikov instead of Kalikov.
Okay, under the. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so
the
section.
No need to apologize, PJ.
Section
8. No need to apologize. There's a lot of minutes here.
Section 8B. I. Line 2. Kalikov. Okay.
That's good.
All right. Okay. With these amendments in place, do I have any motions to approve the agenda with the amendment?
Second.
Yeah.
Perfect. I don't have my gavel. Approved. Moving on to late additions to the agenda. Does anyone have any late additions to the agenda that they wish to bring up? Okay, business of the day. Today we have transportation here. So everyone, please join me in welcoming Bridget and Reed from transportation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
On this lovely weather day.
Oh yeah, it's a great day.
Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
You want to come up?
Yeah, if you want to come up to the front of the room or join us.
Just for the mic. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you can get a table.
Yeah, okay. Perfect. Yeah, if you're comfortable. The room mic should pick up everything.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We have a presentation. I'm Bridget Brady, Senior Director of Transportation and Delivery Services. Absolutely thrilled to be here and chat about all the things that transportation is up to.
I'm Reed Hugerich. I'm the Assistant Director of Transportation. Happy to be here as well.
It's been quite some time since we've been able to come and visit. Some disruptions, I think, in our worlds. First, we'll talk about some feedback that we've received. We collect a lot of feedback either in survey form. We have visited with the EA Welfare Committee on a very regular basis. I did visit GPSA, I believe, at some point.
November.
In November and had received some good feedback there as well. So we'll talk a little bit about what we've been hearing. There's some transit updates. Transit comes up quite a bit. And so we'll talk about TCAT and some of the issues and or perhaps some successes that we've realized in transportation priorities. Otherwise, we do a lot more than parking and transit. I know that doesn't really shine through very often. There are not a lot of sexy projects in transportation, but we have a lot of fun things coming up. And then some feedback that we had just received, and I know that many of you probably heard President Kalikov's address to the university. So we want to take off the table no new parking. He has mentioned that we will not be building new parking. And so any of our solutions and conversations that we have around parking will, that's the caveat, is we have to figure out how to use the infrastructure that we have now in place. And so I just want to put that out there right now because that has been the mandate. So we can move into the feedback. And the commuter survey, did you want to kind of speak to?
Sure. So as part of our submittal to the Association for Sustainability in Higher Education, we need to provide information on a variety of things about sustainability at Cornell, but in particular for us, it's information on how people get to and from campus and what kind of our fleet is. And so we were at the point where we needed new data. We, this fall, put out a survey to everybody. We got some decent responses, over 5,000, only 15% of the population, but that's, you know, fairly standard for what we see. So again, got some good feedback from that. It was an interesting update to see how things have changed. This is our kind of our first foray back into this information post-COVID. We know that commuting habits changed quite a bit during the pandemic. So this was a good snapshot of kind of back to reality. So you can see the breakdown here. I won't go through all the numbers, but generally speaking, this, you know, employees were a little more responsive than students, but a large portion of our population, at least from the responding population, lives close by. So in the city or town of Ithaca and within Tompkins County, you can see there it's over 3/4 of the respondents. So that jives with what we've seen in the past for other or the surveys as well. And then time spent commuting round trip. This is pretty standard for us as well. Typically, a person will spend up to about 30 minutes each way. And there's, of course, exceptions to that. But, so this, again, tracks with that information. Next slide. So this, again, from the sustainability report perspective, this is the information we were really after to see how commute patterns have changed and student patterns have changed. So we still have very good representation from students of sustainable modes. So the majority of students are walking or taking the bus. A minority of them are driving their own personal vehicles. So that's great. We don't have enough parking to on campus to support everybody who would want to drive, whether that's employees or, you know, all the students, et cetera. So it's great to see the ridership numbers for TCAT and for people that actually walk to campus be so high. So that's great. On the staff and employee side of things, as staff, that includes faculty as well. That 60%, 61.5%, that's very similar to what we had pre-pandemic. These are people that drive their own personal vehicle, single occupancy vehicle. That's a number that was targeted in the climate action plan for the university in 2009 to come down. That's something we always keep an eye on, and something certainly we would like to bring that down, because that every one of those vehicles is taking up a parking space and causing congestion or pollution, et cetera. So what I think was the most interesting from this data was that the number of riders for TCAT from the employee side of things went down quite a bit. That mirrors a national trend of decreasing ridership on transit. And then what we see is the work remotely all or most of the time at 10% being, that's essentially taken that loss in the TCAT that has been replaced by the remote work. Something that we really didn't see much pre-pandemic, unsurprisingly. So generally speaking, again, this was really comforting to see the data that nothing is completely out of whack, but it certainly is something that we recognize that with the loss of employees on TCAT can have kind of longer term implications. So we would like to get those numbers back up.
And after the visit with GPSA, one of the requests was, can you, take the student, the population in graduate students and undergraduate students, because the commuting patterns are different, commuter needs are different. And what we did see is graduate students, and I will forward this on to those that have asked, the graduate students do rely on TCAT far more than, or transit far more than undergraduates. Makes sense. Most of the undergraduate students are on campus. That would probably be more of the walk and the running, whoever's running to class. Yeah, next. Okay, so transit updates. I'll talk a little bit about the service level agreement with TCAT. We, 2 years ago, signed a contract with TCAT that actually ties our payments to the level of service they provide, because there was a loosely written memo of understanding that, you know, they could actually, it didn't matter how much service they put out there, we would pay $3.3 million. And we wanted to make sure that we were treated as a customer, as Cornell being treated as a customer. So we had a service level agreement that ties the amount that we pay. In total, we pay $4.3 million. 3.3 of that is tied to this service level agreement with targets of service in, I think that there are now 8 routes that are either adjacent to or on campus that are the circulators. In the past 2 years, TCAT really struggled in the beginning. Last year, reportedly, they did well in meeting the numbers, but there isn't any control over what TCAT puts on the road, which routes. We haven't gone that far. There is a different agreement with TCAT that limits our ability to do that. And we will certainly advocate once we know how they actually allocate resources and the use. We're looking for more data, because what we would like to do is push back and say, well, this doesn't seem to be working. There aren't that many riders, but you're putting 50% of your resources towards that. We would like a little more input, feedback, advocacy towards that, and we'll work on that. Not quite sure how we're doing this service period. It's based on semesters. I know that we've had some cancellations. We've left TCAT's left some folks on the curbs. Route 10, you know, comes from Fall Creek up. I know that there was a lot of cancellations. They're still dealing with maintenance issues, mechanics, staffing. And we don't want unsafe buses on the road, but we'd certainly like more buses on the road. So more to be seen. Fall looked to be very good, but the weather has also caused some problems with such things. So that's the service piece of it. The amenities, I know that there, if you wanted to talk about the app.
There was some concern over the app, whether there's various apps that people use. Typically, a transit provider will have the GTFS. It's a generic transit feed service. And there's a live version of this that essentially shows where their vehicles are. That's pushed out, and the app can pull that information in to an API and show on their app where the buses are located. TCAT, from a cost-saving measure, they decided to stop supporting that. They do still track this real-time vehicle locator information through the Avail app, which is what's promoted on their website. So if anybody is interested, there's been some pushback from students saying the app that I use, which is, you know, app X, Y, or Z, whatever the one they've chosen, is no longer showing where their bus is, but that information is still available in TCAT's app. If you go to their website, it'll show how to download it. That's just, again, minor feedback, but for folks that are concerned about that, there is a workaround.
Right, so transportation priorities otherwise, TDM or transportation demand management is as much to do with that 61%, let's reduce the 61% of single occupancy vehicles and be more responsible about how we use the resources we have on campus, utilizing, you know, carpool or rideshare, et cetera, the transit for one. And given that we will not be building more parking, it is part of perhaps putting then the onus on the commuters a little bit to actually start car share, rideshare, vanpool, whatever it is, move a little more towards transit, quite simply because there are several reasons to do so, sustainability being one. We have found that, you know, there are more cars on campus now than we've ever seen before. Population has grown some, but again, limited resource, how do we manage that? We do have a transportation demand management and safety coordinator on our staff now. So you will probably see more information coming out about how do you carpool. These are the transit routes that you can actually use, doing some concierge transit or transportation planning, helping folks get to where they need to be, and they don't know all the time what is it that they can utilize. And parking system balance.
Yeah, so we have, generally speaking, it's kind of, like Bridget said, it's a fairly finite number of parking spaces. It is traditionally been sufficient for our demand on campus, but it's not always necessarily where people want to park. You know, ideally, from a selfish perspective, I'm going to be able to park exactly right next to the building I want to go to, and I can be able to move throughout the day to where I want to go. That's just really not the paradigm we live in right now. And so we have to be figure out ways that we can balance that. If there's parking available in one area, how do we get people to be able to use that pricing or encouraging folks to go that there, and then providing the transit for them to go to the destination that they want to go. And so we have hired a consultant who's coming here actually next week to help us with getting smarter about our system, better technology, and better management, so that we can be better stewards of this resource.
I think one of the feedback that we've received quite a bit is, and particularly through the EA Welfare Committee, is the forgotten population is the hybrid worker who is only here on occasion. We do have annual permits. We can talk about the daily decision lots, are not actually functioning as we'd intended for the hybrid employee or student, for that matter. It isn't functioning correctly. But what hybrid employees find is that they cannot find parking spaces in the close parking areas. And if they come in in a regular schedule, it is not reliable. And so we've been looking for solutions to help with the one day versus trying to find a daily decision parking area that is in high demand. And we've discovered that probably underpriced and or wrongly configured. And so we talk about parking system balance. The area that we have flexibility is in the short-term parking areas, Crescent Lot being one. There are a few other areas that the flexibility is that sometimes they have to come offline. And I know that we've experienced that. I'm sure the B lot came offline, and that was very unexpected. There were some changes in the Vet Med hospital that their caseload had increased, and then all of a sudden the parking lot, they didn't have parking for their customers, for the clients. So some of the parking lots had to come offline. We certainly want to provide more information and communication in advance. But that is something else, and we can certainly talk about that at the EA Welfare Committee meeting. We found that we really weren't doing a very good job of communicating. We've been on our heels. A lot of the situations, disruptions, but there are things that we can be more proactive about. And so that was one of the commitments, was to become better communicators, because many people rely on our services.
I'll just say, I saw Yvonne on there on the call as well, and we spoke with him a couple weeks ago and had a very productive conversation. That was one of the themes that kind of floated to the top, was there's some frustrations from employees who showed up. There was a new construction project at a displaced where they normally park, and just not having much heads up on that. So that was a salient point taking that. And, so that's something we plan to do better moving forward. So this is going back again to that survey and looking at, like we said, if we have a finite resource, we want to be smart about it. How can we get people to try different modes of a sustainable mode? Certainly some people live in areas where they can't, we say somebody's walking in. Well, I live in Groton, I can't walk in. It totally makes sense. But we certainly want to provide choice. So if that person wants to carpool with another employee, or if they want to use a park and ride or whatever the other alternative is, that we want to do this. So we looked at what incentives might be available to encourage people to take a more sustainable mode than driving alone. And you'll notice there the kind of the top two are very much related: more frequent and reliable transit, and unlimited free TCAT bus passes. That goes to what Bridget talked about earlier. We're trying to get tied to TCAT a little bit more of our funding associated with the service levels that they are committing to. But certainly we don't have full say over exactly how they use the resources. So recognize that is a challenge for people and a frustration, and TCAT recognizes it as well. They've done a hiring blitz, and they've been trying very hard to bring additional drivers on board and additional mechanics. They seem optimistic that they'll continue to improve, but certainly recognize that as a pain point and a barrier for folks to take sustainable modes.
Some things that have come up in the past were what happened to the circulator, because we've been talking about we need the circulator to go around campus. It's beautiful. All of the assemblies put forth a resolution. It was accepted by President Pollack at the time. Of course, then again, some major disruptions in our lives, and so that the circulator we were relying on TCAT to provide. We were just about there. COVID hit, and there have been suggestions or requests. Well, why doesn't Cornell do the same thing? And the evaluation occurred. I think we saw something from 10 years ago. From 10 years ago, just to get to the East Hill Plaza and back to Central Campus was $300,000 for one bus route, and I don't think it was for the full day. So taking that into consideration, where do we use the funding that we have for the greatest good? And so one bus line, unfortunately, wouldn't move enough people to justify, which would be compounded by 5% over several years, far more than $300,000. So that is another consideration. The circulator, not giving up, but we, again, need the data from TCAT to find out what is it that you're actually doing and being as bold as saying that. And then cash and prizes, cash prizes only work for a little while. And so the carrot and stick, so the carrot only works for a little while, and then folks change their patterns again. Preferred parking for carpoolers, we actually have. So check, we have that for carpoolers. We just need enough folks to take advantage of some of the carpooling matching services that are available. And then infrastructure, we'll talk about EV infrastructure coming up. You can do the next slide. I think this is more, okay. So we also talked about, we have parking, we have transit, but we are also in charge of pedestrian bicycle safety programs. We have something that, a resolution that we dug up from 2015. It was just a year after I had arrived, and you were
right before me.
Right. Yeah. And it was from the SA asking for a program much like this and adopting something called Vision Zero. It's quite the foresight, because we do intend to do something with Vision Zero, and I'll certainly ask for you to talk about that. And then electric vehicle charging infrastructure. There's a high demand for this small amount of chargers that we have on campus. There's high demand because we do not charge for the use of the chargers. And so if it's free, folks will camp basically the entire day with or without charging. And so the initiative coming up, and it should happen soon, is a cost recovery model. Transportation services currently incurs quite a bit of expense in providing these. And so the cost recovery and the amount at this point, it will be an hourly amount. It will help with demand, cost recovery, and make it more equitable and available to all. whereas right now it's not available to everybody because it's in parking garages where permits are required. So we're working it out so it's equitable, available, and it would be free because it does cost someone. So we are working towards electric vehicle charging infrastructure. That's phase one. Phase two, it's a third-party provider to make sure that we have enough on campus. But the pedestrian bicycle safety programs, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we like Bridget mentioned, Vision Zero is this a concept that came out of Sweden, I believe it was in the late 90s. It's been around for 20 plus years. And it's essentially kind of reframing the approach to traffic safety by saying that kind of no level of serious injury or death is acceptable, that we should have, our goal should be zero fatalities or serious injuries from traffic violence, and they classify it as traffic violence. And so some of the key components of a Vision Zero program are data collection and analysis, speed reduction, education, and some engineering changes. So instead of assuming that every driver is a perfect driver and they're going to obey the rules and they're going to do certain things, the Vision Zero approach is to assume that people, that drivers are humans that make mistakes. And so to try and design the infrastructure around that to protect people that are vulnerable road users, which in most cases are pedestrians and cyclists. So that's why we did the speed limit reduction last year, 2 years ago, from 30 miles an hour on campus to 25. The modest difference, but there's good data that shows the chance of surviving or the risk of a serious injury or death from being struck, even that 5 mile an hour difference is a huge, it's non-linear reduction in risk. So we'd love for it to go lower. If the state law changes, we'll be able to go lower at some point, but currently this is as low as we can go. But we are we have a safety committee with members of engineering and campus police and some other groups, campus planning, that are all interested in this same thing. We're looking at what are those physical changes that we can make to make the road safer around here. That's what we're working on. We also have we're in the process right now of redesigning campus road from Stewart Avenue all the way to Caldwell Road to look at ways that we could provide better pedestrian and cycling infrastructure there.
So if possible, at some point, we'd like to come back and present just on the Vision Zero and the public, the pedestrian bicycle safety programs. What this will require is a formal, say a mandate, but a proclamation that Cornell is going to adopt Vision Zero. And oftentimes in transportation, as was the circulator resolution, this would actually be a wonderful way for Cornell to say, we support this. We intend to reduce fatalities to zero or near misses, et cetera. So hopefully we can get an invite back to start talking about pedestrian safety as well as some of the other transit updates that we are happy to bring whenever it is that you need us to.
The city of Ithaca has at least had started the vision, but is it still? I know Eric left the city.
Yes. So they've lost several members of the kind of key group that were pushing that effort. There's still some interest, I think, in again, kind of following the Vision Zero concept. I don't know how official it is out there and if there's much movement there, but Eric was instrumental in getting the state law changed so that we could reduce from 30 miles an hour to 25. It seems, again, seems kind of minor, but it was a big deal, remember.
We certainly hope for that to happen again. Absolutely. We'll lead the charge.
Yeah, as someone who, at least last semester before it started snowing a lot, like rode a bike, I was one of the 1%, I guess, apparently, that rode my bike around campus. I, you know, I was curious because I definitely didn't feel like that, you know, like the safety level sometimes. And it's mostly just like human error. My car is drifting significantly into the bike lane, or like, you know, maybe it's not the T-Cat's fault, but like when it turns, it's like cutting into the lane. You gotta like getting squeezed between like the curb and stuff like that. I was wondering for this Vision Zero thing, is this for like education for drivers, education for the bike and pedestrians? Like, how is that implemented? Like, I don't know, is it like before you can get a permit, like, do you have to just like do one of those like things that you have to click through? Like, I don't know.
Right. Yeah. So that's a good question and a good suggestion there on the latter part there about what form that would take. And it might be when you're, you know, registering to drive a university vehicle or something like that, maybe it could be tied to parking permits. But we see it as twofold, one, educating drivers and also educating pedestrians, because distracted walking is, you know, certainly can be a contributing factor. It's not, in my opinion, as bad as a, you know, as the, I think the bigger risk is from the distracted driver. You're in a 4,000 pound vehicle. That's the real conflict point, right? But certainly educating all users to say, hey, you know, phones down when you're using the crosswalk, or look both, you know, whether it's look both ways. The challenge is we have such a transient population, you know, churns every year, and education programs have kind of limiting staying power. So we recognize that. So it needs to be an ongoing effort and also be coupled with things like engineering changes that would prevent, say, the vehicles from drifting into a bike lane, you know, whether that's a curb or raised bike path or something like that. So that's what we're looking at with the campus road in particular, knowing that that's our longest single stretch of road and has some real challenges, but it's also a popular biking and walking route. But it's tough. I mean, it's hilly, it's potholes, it's narrow.
I think to answer your question too, to bring it to bicycle safety, an education program just in particular for those cyclists and for those in the Vision Zero construct, that we have as many concerns with cyclists not using in either helmets and or not knowing how to use the road, you know, that. Cycles that are not well maintained. So the bicycles that, and I know we haven't touched upon bike share.
Yeah, I would just also say, like, as a bike rider, I suppose, who tries to DIY a lot of like the maintenance and stuff, because, you know, how can I do it on campus? I feel like that is definitely something that probably puts people off riding bikes. I don't know. I had another point. Oh, also, just something. Most, if not all, I think there's like one place where there's like a bike covering, where they're stored. Cause like, you know, I go to class, I come back and it's just been rained on, and like, it's rusted significantly since I got here. So, you know, I think like all these sort of things just compound, and like, that might explain why, like, you know, I walked a mile to go to class the first semester I was here. My parents were appalled. Like, don't people bike? I'm like, I don't know why, but no. Yeah. So,
no, I completely agree on the covered bike parking. It's a critical amenity. Our challenge has been in the past finding one that are, you know, that we can actually implement on campus, whether from an aesthetic standpoint, from a space standpoint, from a, you know, engineering and architectural standpoint, but then also how making sure that we make them available. So if you look down and for instance, in the entry to Clark over here, it's covered because it's inside the building, and you'll see some bikes that are tagged that have been there for you know, over 5 years. It's so making sure that, so that's, you know, if I'm
a bike in front of Statler that's been there for at least 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. So we try to stay on top of that, but it's not, you know, we'd also don't want to take somebody's bike who's, you know, actually using it. So totally noted and agree. Yes.
Well, I think, isn't it difficult to get projects that are construction projects to embrace, you know, they don't want to pay for covered permitting. I think that we had the successful one on Reservoir Drive, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Going by Warren Project, but.
Yeah, often when a lot of our stuff is funded by the projects as they go in a new building or a renovation. But from the groups that are building these, constructing these buildings, they're thinking, well, I want to take all the money that we have and put it to our programs, right? We don't want this stuff out here, this interstitial space between the buildings, you know, whether it's rainwater, you know, bike infrastructure, stormwater, anything, they'd rather put that towards their programs, understandably. So we're just trying to figure out a better way to do that, making sure that it's routine.
And not to continue too far, but bike infrastructure is very important to creating a bike culture, right? Safety, but these are $1,000 plus. We don't want to keep them in the rain, snow, heat, whatever it is. So absolutely understood. But if opportunity, we will certainly try to find funding.
There's a question that came in on chat. NYSERDA to offers grants for EV charging stations. Mm-hmm. If a fraternity used grant money for a charging station, would it be swept into your third party EV charging cost recovery model?
If Cornell paid for it, then if our department paid for it. If they pay for it, no,
it wouldn't.
Right.
And there's certainly the arrangements. Some are on Cornell owned land. That they manage their own parking. There's some that are Cornell land that use our parking system. So it can depend.
The fraternities depending.
Certainly, I just love that idea of people looking for ways to make it happen.
Yeah.
And to the point, we did ask about electric vehicles, and currently our population, about 20% or so. Will or do have a vehicle or electric vehicles. But these are also, if you look at it, you think about it, 50% of the population lives within 30 miles, so they should have range. So
without needing to charge.
Trying to balance that and charge out. That is it for our formal presentation, but love questions.
You mentioned before the TCAT being able to see how they're doing. How do you really measure that? I mean, I work at the Vet College, and we do have some bike parking there covered, but we're kind of out of the way. But so I come down here and, you know, try and catch the bus. And sometimes I'll walk all the way from downtown. There's no bus from, you know, a half an hour. How do you keep track of and be, you know, where's the bus app doesn't work?
So we, TCAT submits to us every month data on the routes that we've mutually identified as the quote unquote campus routes that should be covered under this service level agreement. And so it shows, you know, the target goal and how they you know, what level they reached on that. I'll say this has been their approach, and it's frustrating that it's their approach, but it's also very understandable. It's a pragmatic approach. If they have a reduction in service that day, either because drivers aren't available or a vehicle has had to be pulled offline for repairs, their approach has been to reduce the service on higher frequency routes instead of on lower frequency routes. Well, almost all the higher frequency routes are around campus because this is where most of the ridership is. The logic being, if this is every 15 minutes a bus is coming, we have to remove one, now it's coming every 30 minutes. It's less convenient, but it's still being served versus if something is coming once every hour. And now if we remove that bus, now it's not coming at all that morning, or it's, you know, it's 2 hours in between. Right, so I certainly understand why they do that, but it is frustrating that we do feel the brunt of that impact. So the ultimate goal then is to continue to support them and encourage them to hire more drivers and to make sure that their vehicles are roadworthy and well-maintained.
So they self-report?
No, yes, they do self-report off the system, but what we're asking TCAT now is actual ridership data per route each day, so that because there may be some unintended consequences of saying you have to reach this amount of hours on these routes collectively or you pay penalty. Well, that doesn't, that doesn't say they won't just throw buses on any route, right, to avoid the penalties. So what now we've asked for is ridership per route, what time, what when did you drop service, and go back to the table and say we have more expectations. This is a lot of money and we're leaving people on the curb. And Cornell is your population. You know, the 80%?
It's over 75%.
80% of the ridership. So we need to make sure that we're using the resources correctly. So we are asking for more information and we'll go back to the table. It is self-reported. They switched systems. I don't know if you all recall the last fall, they had a system snafu. And they've switched card swipe systems. And it has not been an improvement as far as data collection. It has been nightmarish for our users. But again, data seems to decline in quality. So we're really working on that relationship. It is a partnership. It can be awfully frustrating sometimes.
Question.
Yeah.
Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you very much for this report. I have a couple questions. I don't know how many I'll be allowed to ask, but the first question is, you mentioned about TCAT and biking around campus. I don't know I've thought that transportation would also happen to control like C2C, like the bus that goes down to New York City. Is that part of your purview?
It is. Yes, we are in charge of C2C.
Yeah. So, I mean, I note it's been sluggish to get that back up to where it was pre-COVID, but I noticed that like there's, you know, sort of asymmetry in the routes that go back and forth. And as a consequence, it's not going to be taken as often, for example, if I can get down, but I can't get back and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I don't know if there's plans on trying to get those three runs a day or whatever it was back up. I don't know. Can you comment on that?
Sure. We are up now to 15 round trips. We were at 20 pre-COVID, and we do have every intention on actually growing or recovering to that 20 round trip. What had kept us from doing so previously was the availability of buses. During COVID, everything shut down and we could not renew our bus fleet. We now are getting one every year. We're almost completely renewed. And then ridership, yes, connecting those two. So you can get down and you can get back in a reasonable amount of time when you need to. Still working on it.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I guess another question was, I remember the last several times I've taken the bus that like there's kind of a slow eking back of like some of the amenities on the bus, you know, like the snacks and coffee and stuff. Is that something that's still thought of as happening or not?
No. Quite simply to hold the expenses back, the costs. The coffee, there is an expense to it, but there's also a safety concern that, you know, we ask people to stay in their seats, but invite you to go make a hot cup of coffee while the bus is moving. So we pretty much, I love that we could offer such amenities. And in order to keep the costs down as far as consumables, we have to hire more people to stock the bus, even if, you know, the consumables are not that expensive, and also hire more people to clean the buses because snacks make messes. And so we decided, you know, we joke about Cheetos. We might have to bring our own Cheetos type situation. So I do appreciate it. It is an expensive service. Cornell owned and operated, but we're trying to keep costs down. using that type of structure.
Let's see. I don't know if I can ask an additional question, but I was wondering, in Europe and other places, like, it's pretty easy to be able to survey parking lots in a location to know which spaces are open. And, you know, like, part of the frustration that commuters have is they have no idea which lot is going to be open or not, and they drive all over the place. But this is something that could be known well ahead of time, and maybe people can make decisions. Is that something that we might try to implement?
Yeah, absolutely. And totally agree. From a user standpoint, that information is really valuable. And we did a pilot program with a technology that offered that service for the last year and a half. And unfortunately, it was unsuccessful here. It really was, it wasn't giving us reliable data. We fully hoped that and expected that to be something that we could share with the public, but we couldn't even use it for our own needs. That's we like I mentioned earlier, we have a consultant coming on board. He'll be on campus on a week from today, and to come and look at what other options are available to us that we can give that information. We know it exists, we know it's possible, and it certainly is something that we recognize that we need to have.
The consultant is going to do a technology assessment, so that give us a plan. This is what we put for these purposes. And absolutely, pushing information out to consumers is really important.
I also have a few questions. Do you have stats on how frequently people illegally park? Because, like, I mean, as a student, I know plenty of people who park where they are not allowed to park just because they can physically do that. And so just in terms of campus, clogging up campus, like, how often is that monitored and where?
Right. So we don't know, obviously, every instance of this, right? So we do track how many citations we issue and where they are on campus with time. And we're trying to get smarter about that. And we're also trying to increase the number of ways that people can kind of follow the rules, like they can do the right thing. So whether that was with Park Mobile or making the signage clear or whatever this is, just to say, we're going to give you as much information for you to choose to do the right thing. If you choose to do something wrong, we'll hopefully penalize you for it. We did notice, especially post-pandemic, it was a very marked increase in people getting citations or kind of parking. And so we had a real frustration with trying to bring that number down, especially the number of people that had multiple citations. If somebody comes in and gets one citation, I'm not too concerned about that. They're not impacting the parking regulation that much. But if somebody's coming in routinely doing this every day or every week, that's the behavior that we were trying to curb. And so this has come up. This has been a little bit of a pain point we recognize, but the cost of the citations versus the cost of the permits, there was the math wasn't really working out, especially for student permits. It was, you get over 20, 25 citations before you covered the cost of an annual permit. So students were making the very rational choice that I'm going to just not get a permit and I'll just take the chances. Hopefully I don't get a ticket, you know, that sort of thing. So we last year increased the cost of our citations. Again, a pain point for people. We recognize that, but again, trying to change that behavior because we want to be good stewards of this resource. And if people are trying to do the right thing, they purchase a permit and they come in and they can't find parking because we have too many people that are parking illegally. That's what we're trying to curb, that bad behavior. And we are seeing some improvement in that, but certainly, the post-pandemic, it was about a two-year period that it got pretty bad with what we call them scofflaws, but, you know, repeat offenders that had some over 20 citations in a calendar year. Quite a few.
I know someone who definitely is on that list.
There was a student that had made a graduation stole out of the parking tickets. It was pretty impressive.
I just There were a bunch of things that came and went. One of the things, like, what when you're growing the campus-to-campus program, bus program, I was wondering to what extent that might be. I mean, I just have this, like, sort of other perception because my sibling is at Dartmouth, and I don't know if you know the Dartmouth coach, which sort of, like, serves more than the campus, as it also serves the entire area. But, like, you know, even on campus, like, the bus, I think, goes from Dartmouth to, like, Boston Airport, like, every hour.
Right.
You know, and I was just like, wow, like, that's crazy, but, like, that makes a lot of sense because they're sort of in the middle of the woods. But, like, we're also sort of in the middle of nowhere. And I was very surprised, you know, when I came here, because I just figured that Cornell was such a large school with so many people that we didn't have a bus. And it just sort of feels like we're relying on our bus to sort of, like, fill those gaps, you know, for better or for worse. But, yeah, I'm just sort of curious, like, what the outlook is. Like, if we're sort of just, like, leaning on our bus, or if we're planning on expanding more.
Yeah, in the short term, we will have to rely on other providers. I don't know that the vision for campus to campus was ever expansion. You know, there have been, you know, calls for it. That model, the, you know, the executive bus with 32 seats doesn't necessarily lend itself to selling enough seats to go to Boston or whatever it may be, because there's some overnight. It's very costly. But that being said, my vision would be to diversify product itself. I have that, you know, either executive shuttles to larger 52 passenger coaches that are less expensive so that we meet different needs. Because I know that it's, you know, it's $87 one way. That's expensive. And I remember being a student, there's absolutely no way I would be on the bus. So I want to, but it will not be in the near future.
And as far as the destination goes, it's, you know, it's part of the mission is to connect the two campuses, the Weill Medical, Roosevelt Island, and here. So it's kind of the natural connection there, as much as we'd like to connect with, say, DC or Boston or Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean like.
No, I totally understood. But we do hear that regularly, and I think it's a valid request. And certainly something that we hear. But that's why it's stuck kind of this New York City to Ithaca thing so far.
Rebrand as the Big Red Bus.
There was a bigger, yeah.
The Big Red Bus. For a second. Thank you. I appreciate the comments on campus. We typically talk about parking, so I appreciate that.
I'm sure students, some like a group of students or something could, like, project team could figure out the parking camera thing or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it might be cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
When it comes to TCAT ridership and undergraduate students, I'm a sophomore. So last year I was on the unlimited plan, and then this year, you know, while the systems were still kind of all wonky, I kind of was not technically not supposed to be.
Yeah.
I'm a big proponent of using public transportation. I take the bus at home. I take the train when I'm at home. So I'm a big fan. And I do have a car while I'm here in Ithaca, but I don't like to use it unless I'm going off campus. But my ridership of TCAT has gone way down now that I no longer have access to it during the day. Because honestly, it's most valuable to me when I can go up and down Tower Road. And it, you know, shaves off some of that passing period time. Is there any consideration that, I mean, TCAT probably would be more utilized and by upperclassmen? Because I, in my opinion, freshmen all being on North Campus, like, that's the easiest and closest walk to Central Campus. Yeah, then, I mean, it's just like less work than walking up, trudging up the slope. But has there been any consideration for increasing who has that access to the TCAT?
Yeah, it certainly has been. There's two kind of considerations. One is the funding, but I think we can figure out ways around that, right? We can be creative at other schools to figure that out. The challenge, really, the most kind of salient one is this TCAT's capacity and their ability to to carry that many people. We're already struggling to provide the service that we've agreed upon. And so to then increase it by, say, 20% or more for the demand, they've shared in the past that they weren't comfortable, they didn't have the capacity to do that. Certainly something that we'll continue to certainly support it. I think if we're going to make it difficult for students to drive to campus and expensive, and we don't want to provide the parking, this is a great alternative if we can provide this. So certainly, again, we don't want to just keep kind of pushing this off on a TCAT, because they are a great partner with us, and we appreciate everything they do. They really help us maintain the campus that we have. But there is a little a struggle there with what they can provide and what we would like for them to provide.
Very complicated funding model, and of course, the student passes that are sold actually contribute to that $4.3 million payment to TCAT, and this has been this way since the 90s, well before we arrived. Most universities do provide free transit via either a transportation fee through the students, or they just cover it. And so this is. Both come from universities.
To Syracuse to go across campus for a game before as a non-student.
Right. Exactly. And we both come from universities that had free transit. So when we arrived here, it was still trying to figure that out. And I've been here for 10 years. So both Reed and I have a vision for free transit for everybody on campus. Now,
it's just one of those things, I think, that along with like the gym costing extra money, like just kind of makes me feel like things are being nickel and dime.
Which we know that you guys only have one part of that puzzle, but students, it's really a lot.
No, I completely understand. It could solve a lot of problems on campus. It could move students and even more staff back onto the bus.
Yeah. If there's an opportunity. Just as a statement, this is a question, but when it comes to that education of people driving, biking, and walking on campus, one of my favorite suggestion would be the term checklists, having, especially for the incoming students, having an instructional video on what is a bike lane in the United States look like, what is it like to drive on this campus, because also, I mean, there are a lot of people who drive when they're students here who aren't from the United States and like, or don't drive otherwise. And like, that's a little scary too. And even just walking, like I do not like driving through campus because it is, I feel like when I'm walking on campus, I feel like I'm gonna get hit by someone. When I'm driving, I feel like I'm going to hit someone. So there's really no way to win. But that's my biggest suggestion, is that especially incoming students over the summer, pay a lot of attention to those videos because they are on slow release and you have to get them all done. It seems like it's really high pressure and stuff. So that's my suggestion.
Great, I appreciate that.
What we do know is, and it's unfortunate, campus is used as a thoroughfare to get from one side of campus. This is the only way immediately to get to one side of Ithaca to the other. And so this road right here is used by community members. They have nothing to do with campus. How we curtail that has always been a mystery as well. So we have a population that shouldn't be on campus. Thank you. The video and the checklist, it's pretty low hanging fruit too.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you.
Any other questions?
There was one from Erica, probably. Can you all explain how the 81.6% is guiding the approach to establishing solutions to parking issues on campus? 81.6% seems like a really good number, but could be misleading for a consultant to see when there are over 20,000 students on campus, over 10,000 staff. I'm not sure how many faculty, and at least half of those folks are driving and parking on or near campus.
Yeah, and there's about 2,000. What the 81.6
percent ones that probably should have been.
Did we lose them for a second?
Yes.
Yep, that was.
I think.
Are we just talking to ourselves?
Yes, I think Jessica said.
We would be kicked out.
Perfect timing. Just when they're answering your question, Erica.
Of course, it's something that I couldn't switch off or delay.
Yes, the auto restart.
I guess we're supposed to leave and then try to rejoin.
Yeah, I think we have to leave out and come back. I think that's the directive she gave.
Or Eric, you could take your laptop out and join the fun.
Can you all hear us online?
No, we can't. We're trying to join and come back in.
Okay.
Yeah, I think people are leaving. Yeah. Okay.
I can hear you. Should I leave and come back in?
I just left and then I came back and here I am.
All right. No.
Eric, we're still kicked out.
Yeah, I just logged out and tried to come back in again, and it's the same group, so.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.